This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
It's time to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, you are here on Checkpoint on Joy, broadcasting nationwide on the Community Radio Network. My name is Luke, and I'm very excited about this interview because I have two very special guests on the line with me all the way over in Poland. So the time zones have been fun, but we've made it work together, which is great. Two of the team from Bloober Team, whose game The Medium comes out this week. So you can check that out now on Xbox Series X and PC, also via Xbox Game Pass. So I am joined by Wojtek Pico, the lead designer of The Medium, and also I'm joined by Jack Zemba, the producer at Bloober Team. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Hello, guys, and thank you for having us here.
Yeah, no, it's really great to have you, and hopefully I didn't mess your names up too badly in my introduction just then.
It was perfect.
It was perfect, man.
Don't worry.
Awesome. We're off to a good start. So I think it would be really good to start off by talking a bit about Bloober Team in general, because I know over the last several years, since about 2015, you released your first sort of psychological horror game with Layers of Fear. Since then, you've had a sequel to that. We've had Observer and we've had Blair Witch as well, all leading into this release of The Medium. And I thought I just wanted to know, like, where does this love of horror games and psychological games come from?
Oh, so I think this love for terror and, you know, dark themes was here in Bloober even before Layers of Fear. If you check our previous titles, and especially our biggest flop on that we released on the market, the game was called The Basement Crawl, and it was like a, you know, Bomberman with the horror vibe. And the game was really bad, and it was like at the turning point in the company, because it was the moment that we knew that we need to, you know, deliver something very strong and very good to just to survive, yeah, or stop making games. And that was the moment when, you know, the company took the road towards the horror. We are horror fans here. We knew that, you know, we want to make something that we love. And we started prototype Layers of Fear, and the rest is history.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, so far, the Bloober kind of signature is really messing with reality. I could use other words, but I'll keep it PG. It's about, you know, taking the world that we know and kind of almost turning it upside down and really, you know, messing with the visuals and really playing with, well, I guess playing with the player and I guess showing a lot of things that maybe they didn't expect. So has that always been, you know, I guess the style that you wanted to portray in these games?
Yeah, like, you know, our art department, it's really, really strong. What we can pull off with visuals in our games and how we can mess with them. So we can do some crazy stuff like in the Layers of Fear, you know, changing environment. In Observer was like one bar higher in a way, and added, you know, the cyberpunk vibe to all of it. With Blair Witch also, the visions and other stuff that you can find there. Of course, I don't want to spoil anything. So, you know, and here, what we do, yeah, we do, you know, to worlds at the same time. Hello.
Yeah, but we really are fans of psychological horror, and we believe that, you know, the most terrifying things are happening in your head. So we always, you know, want to bet on something that will mess in your head, like a shift-changing environment, instead of, you know, direct fights of with the monsters and stuff like this. So yeah, for us, even if you know, think about the first Alien movie, the movie itself becomes less scary when you actually see the monster. And that's why we, you know, want to mess with the environment, mess with your head, to, you know, dwell into your mind for those psychological fears instead of, you know, fearing of being killed. So yeah, that's the way we like our games to be made.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, talking about inspirations of horror, because I've always been a horror game fan. I played them all the time growing up. They scared the crap out of me growing up, but I still kept playing them anyway. And I couldn't help when I was playing through the medium, and, you know, congratulations on the game, you're being as good as it is, in my opinion. I couldn't help but get vibes of Silent Hill, especially when you're talking about, you know, enemies that you don't necessarily see. In Silent Hill 2, one of the key enemies is, of course, Pyramid Head, who you don't really get to see that much. It's more the kind of fear that he's always there. So would you say that those sorts of inspirations like Silent Hill 2 really tied into the work you did on the medium?
Yeah, like, you know, Silent Hill 2... I think it's, you know, the main game that create, in a way, our approach to all our games. Yeah, like it's there, the DNA of this game. But with the medium, it's, you know, really heavy inspired by Silent Hill, and Silent Hill 2 is our main inspiration here. It's our game, it's, in a way, our love letter to the series and to this one specific game. But of course, we don't want to copy anything, but to create our approach to that kind of, you know, storytelling, horror, to have this vibe, to have this atmosphere. So everything you said, it's, you know, really thank you, because that was what we're aiming for.
Yeah, what I would like to tell is that, as Jacek said, the Silent Hill 2, especially the Silent Hill 2, you know, forged our approach to horror, yeah? Because when you think of a Silent Hill 2, it's a game with great atmosphere, great music, and great mature story, yeah? And we are aiming for the same things in our games. And even the approach to, you know, building the horror and to create a story, like in Silent Hill 2, never judges the player. Yeah, because everyone knows, no spoilers here, but everyone knows what James did. And at the end of the game is not telling you, okay, this is bad or good. Nope, you have to figure it out for yourself. And we took this approach to our games. We are always also not judging our players for their actions. Yeah, they have to think for themselves what that means and what they will do in such a situation.
Yeah, and I will say as well, you know, you talked about the atmosphere of those games, and I want to talk about the atmosphere of the medium as well, because in some of your previous titles, you did have some pretty effective jump scares. I know there are certain moments, even in Observer, that sort of took me off guard, whether it was like a really loud noise that came out of nowhere, or, you know, a shifting camera angle, or something running at you really quickly. You know, Blair Witch has those kind of moments as well, where things are really in your face and quite scary. But the medium, it really does have more of that slow burn, that kind of long build where it's more, it's that sense of dread. It's that sense of, we don't really know what's coming. So was that kind of intentional as well with this particular game to change the pace a little bit?
Yes. 100%, yes. And we are very glad that you noticed that. Yeah, because that was our aim with this game. Yes. Yeah? So not rely on the jump scares. Slowly build the atmosphere, and of course, at some points we need to, you know, release those emotions. And maybe sometimes there are, you know, loud events are happening. But yeah, we prepared the game to not rely on jump scares and to build the atmosphere. And yeah, that was our goal.
Yeah, we want, you know, to disturb you, to feel the dread. Yeah, and even if you put off the game after you finish it, or you have, you know, some take a break, yeah, we still want, you know, to have this fear, this disturbance a little in your head, to think about the game, to think what you saw there, what happens in the game, and maybe starting to look around if everything around you it's not maybe changing or look differently now. So this is what we're aiming for, and everything you just said, it's 100%
true. Yeah. And we really aimed for this feeling, yeah, because even when I, you know, played Silent Hill years ago, I was thinking, okay, this game is really, really scary. No, it's not scary. It's disturbing. Yeah, because it dwells into my mind when, and I'm finishing playing and still thinking about it. Yeah. So that's great. And I hope we can achieve something similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one thing that really resonates with all of your games, but especially with the medium, is that, you know, storytelling is such an important component. I think sometimes it's easy when you're making a game that's a horror game in that kind of genre that you focus so much on the scary stuff that it doesn't have, kind of like it doesn't really have a soul or doesn't have a heart, but that's definitely not the case with the medium. I think Marianne in particular is such a likeable character, and, you know, she really has so much of herself, and I won't spoil anything either, but she's kind of weaved into this narrative in a way that's really compelling. So is that a kind of method that you have as a team when you're creating these games, that, you know, story comes first?
Yes, you're right. So at the very beginning, we are, of course, thinking about the world, about, you know, the setting of the game. But the story comes first. First, we are, you know, writing the scenario. Then designers are working with script writers to, you know, put the script into the game. Because, yeah, of course, you have to do something as a player, not only watch the cutscenes. But, yeah, the story is the most important thing for us.
And thinking about, let's dive into the medium in terms of this really great concept that has never been done before, which is these two realities, this dual reality gameplay, where you've got the material world and you've got the spirit world. And, you know, we've seen games in the past perhaps have different worlds where you can bounce between them, but we've never seen a game before that actually has both of these worlds rendered on screen at the exact same time. So, I mean, how did this concept even come to life? Like, how did this come up? Was it just a meeting where someone said, hey, wouldn't this be cool? And then you all just jumped on it and thought, we have to find a way to make this happen?
Yeah, you know, like, the concept is really old in the company. Yeah, like, it's even 9-10 years old.
Right.
And it was, you know, sit in our boss mind, yeah. And his wife, so Piotr Babieno and Marlena Babieno, it was like their idea to create the game about being the two worlds at the same time, and the character should be the medium to have, you know, good portrait of that kind of stuff. And, you know, there were several iterations, there was some, you know, some platformer, there was some 3D stuff with free camera, but it doesn't work because it can create dizziness when you have two worlds at the same time and free camera. It's like a little like VR at the first time, because you rotate two worlds, yeah. And then we came to the project, having some, you know, bug tech created before, but, you know, we expand the engine, not we, like the company, like Unreal Engine 4, and of course we trying to find, you know, good platform to it. So it was new consoles. Of course, to, you know, we need to have really powerful hardware to pull it off, to render two worlds at the same time with realistic graphic. So, yeah, for us, it was something that we get, yeah, from the past, yeah. Hey, guys, this is a new project. It was, you know, frozen like two times because we wait for the tech, we wait for the, on what we can run for. Now we feel this is the time. Please do this, yeah.
Yeah, the idea was here in the company even before me and Jack started to work here, yeah. Wow. So, yeah, we, you know, after finishing The Observer, our boss who came up with this idea, with his wife, of course, we have to credit her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was their idea, and that was brilliant. And, yeah, they took us and told us, okay, guys, you finished The Observer, and, yeah, you are, you know, you have a great ideas, and look at this and think, what can you do to deliver that game? And here we are.
Yeah, so this is, you know, our company dream project.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, rebooted like twice or more. So we fulfill some kind of destiny. Yeah. Like we have like old, you know, old stuff. Yeah. That somebody worked here like 10 years ago and he said, like, I never thought we'll fulfill it. And like this is big, even for us it's also really important that we pull it off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, part of that hype or interest in the medium leading up to the launch of the next generation, or I guess I should say the current generation of consoles now, was that, you know, you were kind of the first team to make a statement in terms of saying, no, no, this game has to be on the Xbox Series X. It's not going to run on the Xbox One or the PS4. Like, this is a game that needs that next generation leap to actually be successful. Whilst we're still seeing plenty of other games that are kind of, you know, they're still releasing on both platforms, right? The previous gen and the current gen. So I think that was a pretty bold statement to say, no, this game, it needs this next generation of hardware to run properly. So how was that internally? Like, how was that decision, you know, in terms of it just absolutely cannot run on the previous generation of consoles?
Yeah, like, you know, we don't like to play with half measures. Yeah. So maybe we can do this. Maybe we need to downscale and it can run. Like, we knew you want to render two worlds at the same time and you want the graphic will be not simplistic. Yeah. So sorry, like, but Xbox One and PS4 just can't handle it. Like, I think they will explode or melt. I don't know. So, like, for us, it was really clear that it need to be, you know, really good PC and for now current gen consoles to pull it off.
Yeah, you know, it's always a hard decision, especially for the marketing team, because, you know, you're cutting out a lot of players, with such a bold decision. But yeah, it has to be done like this. Because, yeah, we can create, maybe we will be able to downscale the game, like Jacek said. Maybe we'll have to, you know, create like a cell shading graphic or something so the game will, you know, run smoother. But it wasn't our goal, yeah? We knew that we won't have a spirit world based on Zdzisław Beksiński's painting. We want our normal world to look photorealistic as far as we can, yeah? So, yeah. We knew that rendering towards at the same time, it's too much for the previous generation. And that's when the Microsoft came in and say for, okay, guys, we will support you. This is cool.
Yeah, like, you know, we need to take a lot of risk with this project. Yeah. If the two walls will be okay, if the horror will work, like if the hardware will be okay, we cut, you know, the old consoles, maybe it's not the best idea ever, but we need to be brave and dream big if we want to really fulfill how this game should work and look. And we think that was, you know, really good to do this that way.
Absolutely. And from my perspective, it definitely paid off having the two worlds look as good as they do. I can't imagine that running on the previous generation, that's for sure. But look, I want to talk a bit about, I guess, you know, you mentioned your inspiration before for the Spirit World, who's actually a Polish artist, whose name I won't try and say because I didn't practice before this interview. But I mean, the fact that, you know, that you got this game, you know, you guys as a development team, you're over in Poland, you've got this game that's set over there as well in Poland, inspired by this Polish artist. Is that something that you like to do in terms of, I guess, making it feel more at home or bringing more of that culture into an international space? Because I know Observer was also set in Poland too, right?
Yep. Yeah, so of course we could, I think, create a story of a medium somewhere else, but we feel that it should be here in Poland because the duality is the theme of the game. And even the story tells about the events that, you know, the Marianne is living in late 90s. So this is like a post-communist era in Poland. And the mystery that she is solving connects to the events from the communist Poland. So even here with the story, we have a clash of duality. That's why we choose this setting. It perfectly fits the theme of the game and everything. And yes, Zdzisław Beksiński is a really, really cool, surrealistic, dystopian artist. And we knew that our spirit world has to be something new, let's say new. We don't want it to be based on any religion. That's why we choose his paintings, because they are surreal, like hellish landscapes. And there is always something that connects this crazy world with our world, like, you know, for example, a car, a normal car standing in a, you know, the on the edge of the world, for example. Yeah, so that's why we choose it. We choose his art. And yeah, of course, we would like to share our culture internationally. And I think today it's paying off, like, you know, the Chernobyl TV series or the Dark TV series from Netflix. Yeah, the events are happening in a, let's say, small German town. And the series is great. Yeah, and they are not afraid to, you know, set the big TV series in their own country. And we are also not afraid to do it.
Yeah, it's again like with the console before. We want to be, like, you know, brave, do something really different, not only with one thing. Yeah, okay, we can do the game with the two worlds at the same time. Okay, but maybe based it on the surrealistic painting of Polish painter. Okay, checked, yeah. So maybe, you know, setting should be in Poland and told things about post-communist and communist Poland. Okay, check, why not, yeah? And because of this, you know, the game can be more exotic, more even fresh, even if we don't do, you know, anything especially new in the gameplay stuff, but still, playing the two worlds at the same time, it's new, so, you know.
Yeah, it's great to see someone, you know, having fun with our Polish environment. Yeah. Like I saw, for example, the journalist during the Tokyo Game Show saying about the Observer, wow, this is crazy cool. I have never seen some architecture like this. Yeah. And I was saying to them, okay, guys, I love your Japanese horror games. Yeah. Since I was a kid. And they are saying, eh, there's nothing special in there. Yeah. For me, it is. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Awesome. And I do want to as well talk about the soundtrack of the game, because it is a wonderfully composed soundtrack, a joint production from, I am going to say the name wrong, Acadius from Blue Team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Akira Yamaoka, who is, of course, pretty much a legendary composer in terms of his work in the video game space, specifically his work on Silent Hill. How was that for you as, you know, as fans of Silent Hill, as people who loved horror growing up, and then all of a sudden you have this opportunity to collaborate with this legendary horror composer in Akira Yamaoka?
Please stop.
Yeah, it was just like you said. Yeah, for us, he's Akira Yamaoka-san is a legend. Yeah, so I was one of the lucky guys to first meet with Akira at Tokyo when we were, you know, developing the medium. We knew that we want to create a serious adventure game with Silent Hill atmosphere. And so what's better to create Silent Hill atmosphere than hiring the guy who, you know, pulls the emotional strings there with his music? So when we, you know, when we took the chance to meet with Akira, I was there really nervous. Yeah, so I was excited, like a fan. Yeah, my, you know, dream is coming true. I will meet with the legend. Yeah, and right now I'm sitting with Akira in, you know, in a restaurant, showing him a game on a laptop, and he was, you know, watching the first trailers, and yeah, my hands were shaking, and I was thinking, oh, I hope he will like it, hope he will like it, and luckily he did. Yeah. So then he came to Poland to visit our studio, and he need to, you know, sign a lot of games and posters and vinyl records for the team. So everyone was, you know, excited. And Akira, yeah, he's a really great guy. And we spent a lot of time here in Poland. And even after the work, we show him the city. And we even took him to Zbigniew Beksiński's Zdzisław Beksiński painting exhibition. Yeah, and he was, yeah, really stunned there. Yeah, it was that Eureka moment when he said, okay, guys, now I understand what are you aiming for with with the spirit world. So, yeah, we work with a legend and even became friends. So that's like, for me, it's like a surrealistic trip.
Yeah, I still don't believe it happened. I think I will walk, you know, 1 year from now and I figure it out. Okay, I made a game with Akira Yamaoka. Whoa.
Yeah,
it happened. Yeah, it wasn't a dream, but for now it's like a dream. And, you know, working with Akira is more working like a colleague. Yeah, it's not like there is some guy, you know, in the Japan and we only, you know, threw mates at each other, but he's like part of the team. And this is another, you know, dreaming area that I don't believe still.
Yeah. We have a similar friend with Akira. I think the connection was, you know, easier for us. Yeah, because there is one guy who lives in Tokyo and worked. He's a Polish guy and he worked with Akira in Grasshopper Manufacture with Suda 51 on the game called The Shadows of the Damned. Yeah, so during the meeting, Akira said, "Okay, I know that you know Raphael," and yeah, it was easier from that point. Yeah.
That's so great. I'm smiling ear to ear because I, as a fan myself, I'm just imagining how exciting that would have been. And that's just a great story of how you got Akira involved.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah. I have goosebumps hearing it too. Yeah. It's like, wow, that's so cool. And look, I mean, I could talk to you both all day about horror and about the medium, but I do have to put a stop on this at some point. So I will, I'll just say, you know, what's next for Bloober Team? I mean, the medium, it is, at the time of people hearing this interview, the game's out, people are playing it, and I think people are really going to dig it, they're really going to enjoy it, especially old school horror fans like me. What's next for Bloober Team?
Like, you know, we need to wait and see.
For now, we have to, you know, hide in the darkness again. But we can say that, of course, it will be dark and horrific.
we don't want to close any doors, but you can be sure that there will be darkness behind these doors.
Yeah, so we will try to, you know, create another horror story, but that's all we can say right now. Sorry. Yeah.
Fantastic. No, that's good. You've it's very tantalizing to think, and you've got obviously a few really solid, I guess, potential franchises you can go back to. So it's a really exciting time.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, thank you again. Thank you, Wojciech and Jack from Bloober Team, joining me on the show. It's been great chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure to chat with you. So, yeah, hope you have fun with our next games in the future.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.